In the Gemara Chagiga, Hey Amid Beis, by you it's 5b3, by the way. No, we're 5b3, what do you mean 4b? I don't know, you probably didn't move the page. Thank you.
I wasn't there last week. I didn't have the book last week.
You were here, you didn't have the book.
Oh, yeah, I didn't have the book.
Two, four, six, eight, 10, 12, 14 lines into the very wide lines. No, you're in the wrong Gemara. No. Don't forget, it's the second Gemara. Chagiga Hayamid Beis. 16 lines into the very wide lines. Yeah, here? Yeah. These have two Gemaras. Jews like to make two for one sale. Okay, last time the Gemara was discussing about the Malachim crying, and that they tell you all the private stuff that go on in your life, and the various Gemaras, what's going to be with Apikorsa, with Rabbi Shua, when he knew how to answer the Apikratus, and so on. But now the Gemara continues, it's like a new piece of Gemara. It says in the Pasuk, V'domeya tidma, this is what Hashem says. Hashem says, I will surely weep. My eyes will drip with tears. Because the flock of Hashem, meaning the Jews, has been taken into captivity. So the Pasuk says three times the word tears. Which means, as the Gemara is going to explain, Hashem cries three times. So the Gemara says, Amar Abulazar says, Shalish Dumar Salalu Lama. Why does Hashem cry three times? So he says, Achas al Migdash Rishon, one for the destruction of the first base of Migdash. Achas al Migdash Sheni, one for the second base of Migdash that was destroyed. The Achas al Shagol Yisrael came under. The third one was, not only was the base of Migdash destroyed, but the Yidden were sent into Golos. Or Ikadam, other people say the third one is for Bittul Torah because they neglected to study Torah. So basically Hashem cries three times. First base of Migdash destruction, second base of Migdash destruction, and the fact either the Jews were exiled or they were stopped learning Torah. So the Gemara asks, Bishlei Malaman Diyama Yisrael Shagalu, I understand the opinion that says they cried, that Hashem cries to the Jews in Golus. That's what the Pasuk says. How does the Pasuk conclude? Like he quoted before, Ki Nishba Eder Hashem, because the flock of Hashem has been taken in captivity. But El Laman Diyama Bittul Torah, but according to the person that says that Hashem is crying the third tears, for neglect of studying Torah, my kinish be'eder Hashem, what does it mean that the Jews were taken in captivity? That's not what Hashem's crying for. Hashem says he's crying for bittul Torah. So the Gemara answers, kiven shugoli yisomim kaiman, because the Jewish people are exiled, ein loch bittul Torah godlo mizeh, there could be no greater Torah neglect, because the Jews in Golis don't have time to study Torah so much. Okay, then the Gemara says, Tanu Rabban, Rabbanan learned. Shalaisha HaKadosh Baruch Hu Beicha Olav Aleim B'chol Yem. There's three people that Hashem cries for, three types of people Hashem cries for every day. Al She'ef She'lasik B'Teira V'Eina Esik. One who is supposed to learn Torah and doesn't, so Hashem cries. One is the opposite. She'ef She'lasik B'Teira, a person who is really unable to learn Torah, but learns Torah anyway. I'll explain in a second. Valparnas ha-mizgal ha-tzibur, and a communal leader who behaves arrogantly over the community. So the Mefarshim right away ask, a guy that can't learn Torah and does, Hashem should be happy. It means he's such a great person. So they answer, yeah, it's a great thing, but the bottom line is, a Jew is suffering because of it, because he really can't. Like he Nebuch needs to work and then takes away time and goes to learn Torah, so Hashem cries over it. Not that it's not a good act. I mean, the deed is a very good deed. He can't learn Torah and he still, you know, goes and learns Torah. But Hashem cries over it because it's a very difficult situation. Or they quote the Gemara. The Gemara says that when a person kvetches, God kvetches also. Like, Hashem is upset when a Jew is upset.
probably upset a lot of things. The Jews are always upset about something.
Yes.
Not me, but the other Jews.
He doesn't kvetch. He's not a real Jew. Real Jews kvetch.
No, he would be upset by a lot of them.
Yeah. If you want to know if a guy is Jewish or not, listen how he kvetches. Then the Gemara says as follows. Rebbe, and this is like a superstitious type of a story. Rebbe, have a knock at Sefer Kinnis. Rebbe was reading the book of Eicha. You know Lamentation, we read on Tisha B'Av. V'kakarev begavei, and he happened to read the pasuk that says, Kimata l'psukah, when he came to the pasuk that says, Hishlach mishamayim eretz, that Hashem threw down the glory of the Jews from the heaven to earth. So basically Hashem threw the glory, you know, in the time of the destruction, the Jewish glory, you know, was thrown down to the ground. So nafam min yadei, the book fell out of his hands. It was like a sign from above that he's talking about the glory of the Jew falling down, the book fell out of his hands. Amri commented, me'igre rama lebira mikta, this is a quote quoted very often in Chassidus, from a high roof to a deep pit. Now basically what it means is that Hashem shows that it was thrown into a very, very deep pit from the glory of the Jews that started in a very, very great place. So he says that was a sign from heaven when Hashem made that he should drop the book. Then the Gemara tells another story. Rabbi v'Rabchia, Rabbi and his student Rabchia, have a shakl of Azaburg. They're once going on a journey. Kimatulahumasa, when they came to a certain city, they said, Amrit, they asked, Ikatsuva mirabon and hocha, is there any scholar here, Nezo v'nakba pe, that we can go pay him our respects? It's very interesting. When scholars used to travel in the olden times, when they came to the city, the first thing they did was to call and pay respects to the scholars. So they said, Rebbe was the leader of the Jewish people. And Rebbe was a student, who was also very, very great. So he said, he came to a city, he said, ask the people, is there any scholar here that we can come and pay respects to? Amri, so the people said, there's a great scholar here, but it means he was blind. Literally, it means he had an abundance of light. But that's the way they used to call, in a nice way, blind people. So they said, there's a scholar here, but he's blind. So what happened? Amalei Rabchia, the Rebbe, so Rabchia, the student, said to the Rebbe, you know what? Tivat, you stay here. Le'isizalzel b'nesiyusach, don't degrade your position as being the Nasi, the leader of the Jewish people. Ezel v'akbal akbal, I'll go and pay my respects to him. In other words, what did they think? They thought because he was blind, you know, they thought maybe you shouldn't go. Well, I'll explain the story, but this is the simple meaning of the story. So what happened? Takvi va'ozabadei. Rebbe did not let him. Rebbe said, you what, don't want me to go, but I'm going anyway. So Rebbe went with him. After they paid the respects to the scholar, they were leaving the scholar, Amar Lahu, the scholar said to them, the following statement, a very nice statement. Atem hikpaltem panim hanirim ve'enam reim. You came to pay respects to somebody who is seen, but doesn't see. Tisku, you should merit, lahakpal panim harayim ve'enam nirim. You should merit to visit God, to see God, who sees, but is not seen. And as he said to them, you came to see somebody who could be seen, but cannot see. You should merit to see somebody who sees and cannot be seen. Amar Leis, Rabbi said to Rabchia, Ika ashtu menat me'ab b'chusa. You wanted to prevent me from getting this bracha? In other words, it's a very great bracha. And Rabchia told Rabbi, why do you have to go to visit this blind man? Let me go myself. What happened is like this. And Mefarshim explained, they were both looking for a scholar, Rebbe and Rabchia. So all of a sudden, because he was blind, Rebbe shouldn't go. I mean, what's going on over here? So they explain as follows. They were hoping, the Pri at least was hoping, that when they would tell the people that they're looking for a scholar, the people would run away, right away, run and go meet Rebbe. Rebbe was the leader of the Jewish people. So they thought, Rebbe Chiya thought, you know what? The people, the scholars are going to come to pay Rebbe a respect call. So then it makes sense that Rebbe should pay them back a respect call. But not for Rebbe to be the first one to go. When the guy was blind, obviously he couldn't go visit Rebbe because he's blind. So Rebbe would have to make the first initial call. So Rebbe Chiya said, that's not respectful for you as a leader to be the one initiating the respect call. Because he's blind, obviously he can't see you. So Rebbe Chiya said, don't go. So Rebbe said, you know what, I'm going anyway. Okay? He went. Now, and he says, the Mefarshim explained was, that even a Rebbe, a Nasi, still has to pay respect to a scholar. So you come into a city, you're supposed to pay respects to the scholar. By the way, some people, it's not common practice, because today's world is corrupt, but there are people that come to a city, the first thing they do is to go visit the rabbi of the city. Out of respect, you know, and then when they leave, they get a bracha from the rabbi of the city to leave. And that's what Rabbi and Rabbi Chiya did. So now the story continues. Amr Leif, so Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Chiya said to them, Miman Shemilach, from who did you hear this teaching? That paying respects to a Torah scholar is such a great thing that you gave him such an unbelievable bracha. So he answered, Mipirkad Rabbi Yaakov Shemili. I heard it from the teachings of Rabbi Yaakov. What's the teachings of Rabbi Yaakov? So he says the following thing. The Rabbi Yaakov ish kvar chitaya have a mekabel ape the rabbi kol yoyma. Rabbi Yaakov used to go visit his Rebbe every day. Every day he used to go visit his Rebbe. Kikash, when Rabbi Yaakov became old, Amalei, his Rebbe, said to him, Lein etztar mart, you know what? You shouldn't trouble yourself to come because you're old. It's hard for you to come to me. D'lo yochma, you're not able to do it. Amalei, so Rabbi Yaakov said to his Rebbe, Mizuter, is it then a small matter? Might see what it says in the Torah. V'yichi eid lanetzach, that you should live for eternity. Lo yira shachas, you'll never see the pit, meaning Gehenna. Ki yira chachamim yumusuf, he sees wise men die. So it says, Umaharei chachamim b'misasim. If you're going to see dead tzaddikim, Yichya, the Pasuk says, you're going to live. B'chayayin, if they're alive, alachas kama v'kama, how much more so? In other words, he said to him, this is what Rabbi Yaakov said to his Rebbe. His Rebbe said to him, you became old, don't bother yourself to come to me. It's hard for you. So Rabbi Yaakov said, it says in the Pasuk, if you see dead tzaddikim, meaning graves of tzaddikim, you live forever. So if you see them when they're alive, for sure you're going to live forever. So you want to take that away from me? There's a famous story with Rabbi Shmuel Munkus. We'll leave it at the word. A non-chosid once came to his house. And Rabbi Shmuel Munkus couldn't stand haughty people. I mean, he was a very great man, but he couldn't stand haughty people. And this non-chosid was bragging and talking about himself non-stop. And Rabbi Shmuel Munkus couldn't tolerate it. So middle of the night, when this guy was sleeping, Rabbi Shmuel Munkus walked into the guy's room with a big knife. And he held it over his head. And the guy woke up. And he sees this knife over him. So he says, what are you doing? What are you doing to me? So Rabbi Shmuel Munkus was a big letz. I mean, he had a very great sense of humor. He said to the guy, I'll tell you the truth. I have nothing against you. You're really a great tzaddik. But you see, I have a custom. Every so often I go visit the graves of tzaddikim. And I'm getting old. It's hard for me to travel. So I thought, if I kill you, and bury you here, so I'll have a local grave of a tzaddik that I can always just go and visit. So that's why I want to kill you. So the guy says, no, I'm not such a big tzaddik. And he says a certain sin that he did. So the Shmuel Mukher said, no, you're still a, that sin's nothing. You're still a tzaddik. So the guy said, no, but I did this and this sin. He said, no, it doesn't matter, you're still a tzaddik. Anyway, the guy started confessing all his sins, all the terrible sins the guy did. Finally, Rav Shmuel Mukher said, you know what, you're such a rasha, get out of here. He just humbled the guy, you know. That's the right thing of it. If you see tzaddikim when they're dead, how much more so when they're alive. And then the Gemara tells a new story. This is a completely new story. The Gemara says, Ravidi avud Rabbi Yaakov Baridi. Ravidi, the father of Yevra Yaakov Baridi, Havaragel, he was accustomed, Davaazel Tlosi Yarche Beurcha. In the Gemara Makkos, there's a similar story with more than this. But Ravidi used to travel 3 months to yeshiva, v'chad yemer bebeirav, and he spent 1 day in the yeshiva. That means it took him 3 months to travel, 3 months back, and he stayed in yeshiva 1 day. V'avakarele, the rabbanon called him, they used to laugh at him and call him mockingly, bebeirav d'chad yemer. He was a yeshiva student for 1 day. Because the guy, as the Mefarshim explained, he left right after Pesach, traveled 3 months, and he came back to be home for Sukkot. So it's exactly 6 months. So he traveled 3 months, came back 3 months, and stayed in yeshiva 1 day, and everybody used to make fun of him. What happened? Cholesh died, he felt dejected. He felt very bad. Everybody's making fun of him. Kara Nafshi, he applied to himself the pasuk that says, Shek l'reyeu eyeh, I'm going to be a mockery for my friends. Because everybody was laughing at him. And he felt very bad. Amale, Rabbi Yechanan said to him, to make him feel good, B'matusa minach, I beg of you, Leisanesh lo rabbanon, don't bring punishment upon the rabbis that insulted you. Because we know that when a tzaddik gets upset, we already learned that the Gemara, a curse can come from it. So Rabbi Yechanan said to Ravidi, I beg you, don't get angry at the Chachamim for making fun of you. Because I'm going to show you that they shouldn't make fun of you. Why? Nafik Rabbi Yechanan lebei medrasha. Rabbi Yechanan went to the yeshiva, where the rabbis made fun of him, and he said the following. Ve'eisi yem yem yidrashun. There's a passage that says, in Iyuv, there's a pasuk that says, I'm sorry, there's a pasuk in Yeshaya. They're going to seek me out each and every day, Hashem says. And they're going to desire to know my ways. Okay? So, the question is, seemingly the pasuk says, you seek God, yom yom, means every day. Only daytime. So the question of Yechanan said, v'chi b'yom darshan I say, only by day you seek out God, over Laila ain't darshan, I say, and by night you don't. What is this pasuk saying that every day you seek Hashem, which means during the night not? Alalei melach, what does it teach us? Kala esik b'teira, that if you learn teira, afilu yom echad b'shani, even 1 day of the year, because that's the day that's available for you. The Gemara says, Maila levakosuv, Rabbi Yechanan said to him, the teira considers it, Kilo asa kol hashana kula, as if you learned Torah the entire year. So Rabbi Yechanan said to the Ravidi, don't feel bad that you go 1 day a year to learn. Because Hashem considers it as if you learned the entire year. V'chein, and he says the same way, B'midas peronius, in punishment. What's the story of punishment? So he says, it says in the Pasuk, by when the Meraglim, the spies came back from Eretz Yisrael, so they were there for 40 days. How did Hashem punish them? 40 years. Right? Like it says, B'mis by Yom HaMashir Tarta Ma'asa Oretz, I'm going to punish you the number of days that you were in, spied out the land. So because of that, they stayed in the Midbar 40 years. So Rabbi Yechanan said, V'chi Arboim Shana Chatu, they didn't sin for 40 years. They only sinned for 40 days. So why does Hashem punish them for 40 years? Alalei Melach to tell you, this is pretty sharp. If you sin even one day of the year, Hashem considers it as if you sinned the whole year. That means just like if you learn Torah one day, Hashem considers it, you learn Torah a whole year. If you sin one day, Hashem considers it as if you sinned the entire year. And the Mefarshim explained that what Rabbi Yechon was telling off the Beis Medrash in two ways. Number one, he said, why are you making fun of this guy? The Torah considers it as if he learned the whole year. And secondly, even though you made fun of him only one day of the year that he was there, because other times he wasn't there, they make fun of him one day a year, Hashem considers it as if you made fun of him every day. So Rabbi Yechon, to quiet this guy down, so to speak, that he shouldn't get angry at the rabbis, Rabbi Yechon came and taught that this person is greater for learning one day a year, so don't make fun of him. The Gemara Makkah says even more. There was a guy that did the 6 months a year. He traveled 6 months a year and came back.
And all this happening in Babel.
In Babel. Maybe he went out to Israel. I don't know where he went. But obviously, it took him a long time to get there. Unless, if he was going on business, and while there, he stayed one day to study.
Maybe he was supposed to go to
Huh?
But somehow he just, ate it one day.
Oh, you see, the Mashal explains, the Mashal learns the Gemara, Ravida was away on business. And one day of the 3 months he had a chance to learn, he went in to learn. So they made fun of him like, you're coming one day to learn. That makes more logical sense, because otherwise, I mean, the simple pshat, he's not going to travel 3 months in each direction.
Or maybe in the 3 months he was traveling, he had to work to make a living. Had to stop work.
That's probably the Mashal's, the second interpretation is, he traveled 3 months of business, but he learned one day. Okay, now we're finished with the story of Gemara. We're going back to the halacha part of the Gemara. Okay. Bottom line of Hey Amid Beis. Says in the Mishnah, Ezer Katan, who is considered a Katan that's not obligated to go up to the Beis Hamikdash for Yom Tov? Kol she'eina yachol lirkev al ksefe shel aviv. There was a machlekes between Beshami and Beis Hillel. Beshami says, any kid that's so young, he can't ride on his father's shoulders, he's not obligated to go up to Yerushalayim. Beis Hillel said, any kid that can't walk with his father holding the hand, is not obligated to go. So according to Beshami, it's much younger than Beis Hillel. Because you can have a kid that doesn't know how to walk, but he can sit on his father's shoulders. So according to Beshami, a kid that can ride on his father's shoulders has to go up to the Beis Hamikdash. Beis Hillel says no. He has to actually hold his father's hand and be able to walk up the mountain. So according to Beis Hillel, it's like much older than Beshami's age. Okay? So the Gemara says, Mask of Lord Abzeda, Abzeda asks a question. Ad Hacha, until Yerushalayim, Man Asi, who brought him in the first place? Meaning as follows. There are two parts of going up to the Beis Hamikdash. First, you have to make it to Yerushalayim. And then, in Yerushalayim, you have to walk up the mountain to the Beis Hamikdash. So Rav Zeira asked a very simple question. How did the kid get to Yerushalayim in the first place? Because obviously, as the Gemara learns, you can assume that the mother brought the kid to Yerushalayim. Because if you're talking about a kid that was still nursing from the mother, so obviously he can't stay away from the mother for a few days. So Rav Zeid asked a very simple question, who brought him up to Yerushalayim? And if he got to Yerushalayim by walking, so why can't he go up to the Beis Hamikdash?
since you tell me that the base of Mikdash is in Crown Heights,
yeah.
Is there any mountains by there?
Sure.
Yeah, what, Casco?
No, on the way, in Nevada. The Rockies.
That's taking 3 days to get there.
Yep. Okay. Now, the Mefarshim explain a very simple issue. If the mother didn't go up, let's get one thing straight. In the olden times, they nursed the baby until they were 2 years old. In this week's parsha, last week, B'yem Higomel es Yitzchak, when he was 24 months old. A baby nursed until 24 months. That means, if the father brought the kid to Yerushalayim, and the mother didn't go, the way the Gemara is learning now, that means the kid had to be weaned already from the mother. If he's 2 years old already, then obviously he can walk. Right? What? No, to Yerushalayim could have gone by a wagon. The Gemara's question, how did he get to Yerushalayim? Because what do you think, everybody walked? They rode by horses, wagons, whatever, right? Even babies went on the donkeys or the horses or whatever, yeah? The Gemara's question is, the Grashi says, if he's able to be without his mother, then obviously he can hold his father's hand and walk up to Yerushalayim. So the Grashi says, how did he get to Yerushalayim? Meaning, obviously he's weaned already. If he's weaned, why can't he go up? In other words, Rashi explained, the fact that the kid is in Yerushalayim shows he's able to walk. So why is there an argument between Bishami and Beisilil? If he's old enough to walk, he's old enough to ride on his father's shoulders. There shouldn't be any argument. So Amalei Abaye answered him as follows. No. Aroch, until Yerushalayim, v'chayve eima b'simcha. His mother is obligated in the mitzvah of simcha. I'll explain in a second. So Aitzi'ime, his mother, brought him. Mikan ve'elach, now to go up to the Beis HaMikdash. Iyoch lalis v'lechaz b'yodish shalav Yerushalayim l'arabayis. If he's able, like Beis HaMikdash holds, to hold his father's hand to go up from Yerushalayim l'arabayis, Chayiv, his father's obligated to take him. V'loyen, if not, he's potter. Meaning as follows. The mother has to be in Yerushalayim. Well, meanwhile, we'll see in the, because Abaye says differently somewhere else. Abaye, the Gemara is saying, there's a mitzvah of a samachta b'chagecha, ato ubincha v'eshtecha. You have to make everybody happy. Now, normally, when so it depends, some wives are happy when the husbands leave, but normally, a wife, in order to have simcha, needs the husband there. So the Gemara says as follows. When it came to Yom Tov, there were a few obligations. There was an obligation of a husband and wife to be happy. Secondly, there was an obligation of going up from Yerushalayim to Har HaBayis. So Abaye answers, the truth is the mother came to Yerushalayim. And the baby is not weaned yet. Why is the mother in Yerushalayim? Because in order to have simcha, you need atov v'incha bidach. You know, you need to be you and your wife. Right? The family should be together. So therefore, the mother came to Yerushalayim. Now the din is, to go up to the Beis HaMikdash, the kid could take 2 hours, the whole geshäft. The whole business could take 2-3 hours. The kid didn't have to eat then. The mother could have nursed him in Yerushalayim. Then the father takes him up to the Beis HaMikdash and brings him back down to Yerushalayim. So the Gemara says, it's possible that a kid could be in the Yerushalayim, not able to walk. If he's weaned, he should be able to walk. He's not weaned yet. The mother's still nursing him. The mother's in Yerushalayim. If the mother's in Yerushalayim, it's not a problem. Okay. Like the Mefarshim explained, even though Abaye says technically women are not obligated in Simcha, the husband obligated on Yom Tov to make the wives happy. The mitzvah is on the husband to make the wives happy. But there's no mitzvah for a woman to be happy on Yom Tov, according to Abaye. But Abaye says, as Rishayim point out, most of the time, the women went up to Yerushalayim. So therefore, now you have an argument between Bisham and Beisil. The family is in Yerushalayim. How old does the baby have to be to take him up to the Beis HaMikdash? To walk up the mountain. So Beishame says, if the kid is old enough to be able to sit on his father's shoulders, the father has to bring him up. Beis Hillel says, no, the kid has to be old enough to walk. But the Gemara's question, if he's weaned, he's old enough to walk. The kid's not weaned. The kid's still nursing by the mother in the Yerushalayim. So now the Gemara asks a question on Beishame. Beishame said that you have to take the kid up, even if the kid's able to ride on his father's shoulders. So, hey, Shiv Rabbi Tachas Beis Hillel, Rabbi, on behalf of Beis Hillel, asked a question on Beis Shammai. It says, Chana le'olosa, Chana, the mother of Shmuel Anavi, didn't go up to the Beis HaMikdash, ki amra le'isha. She said to her husband, Adigom alana, until the kid is weaned, Vavi Yosef, and then I'll bring him up to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? So the question is, Vashmuel Yachol Irkivak Sefer Sholavivaya, according to Bishamai, as soon as the kid is able to ride on his father, the father has an obligation to bring him to the Beis HaMikdash. So when Elkanah said to Chana, let's take the baby and go up to the Beis HaMikdash, Chana said no, until he's weaned. But according to Bishamai, much, much younger, he's able to ride his father's shoulders. So how can he not take Shmuel up to the Beis HaMikdash? The fact that Elkanah, the husband, didn't take Shmuel up to the Beis HaMikdash shows there was no obligation for Elkanah to take him up to the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because obviously he held like Beis Hillel that the kid has to be able to walk. And Shmuel probably wasn't able to walk. But it's a question of Beis Shammai. Because why did Chana wait until the kid's 2 years old if he was able earlier to go to the Beis HaMikdash? No, she brought him when he was two. She
what
said,
doing 2 years old?
"Huh? Shmuel was there at the age of two.
Yeah.
It says in the pasuk, "V'yashav sham ad elam." He lived there. He was there forever. So it says, the Medrash says and the Gemara says and the pasuk, "Olam is yovel." She was in the via. Chana was a prophetess. Shmuel died at 52. So Shmuel was brought 2 years old to the Beis HaMikdash, and she prophesies he'll be there ad elam for 50 years. Chana said, "Let the kid be in the walls of the Beis HaMikdash," and Eli raised him basically. Eli and his sons, and that was the whole story. The sons were bad, and the whole thing. No. The pasuk says he was two. That's what Chana said. Let me wait at Jigomel Anad, and then Vavi Yosef. And then said when she brought him, he stayed there forever. Yashav Shamadelam. So, but the Gemara's question is, according to Beis Shammai, Shmuel should have gone up earlier, because he was able to ride on his father's shoulders. So why didn't he go? It's a proof that he didn't have to go. So that's like Beis Hillel. Amalei Avua, so his Rebbe's father said to him, meaning Rebbe's father said to Rebbe, "Well, Taimeich, why don't you ask a different question? Take Shalachana Gufa, why don't you ask a question on Chana herself? Milay Mechayve B'Simcha, wasn't she obligated in Simcha? So why didn't she go with her husband? She should have gone with her husband to the Beis HaMikdash. Ella, what must she? Why didn't she?" So he says, Chana mefankusa yisere chozebe b'shmul. Chana saw that Shmuel was a very delicate child, and he physically wasn't able to go up. So he was potter, and she had to stay with the kid. And v'choshebe b'shmul l'chulsha d'urcha. She thought that Shmuel would not be able to go on the trip. In other words, you're not obligated to take a kid that can't walk just because he's of age. I mean, they is not well enough. It seems, the Gemara says, Shmuel is a very delicate child. It could be it's something else also. Chana didn't have the kid for a long time, so she was like, maybe overprotective of the child. Like Yaakov and Binyamin, even though Binyamin was an older kid already. Like when the brothers went down, you know, to Yosef, and Yaakov didn't want to send Binyamin because he might get hurt, you know. Binyamin was probably 35 years old. More. Probably 37 years old.
You think so? How old was before? Yosef was gone 22 years. So how old was Binyamin before he left?
How much younger was Binyamin than Yosef? Maybe a year or two. Maybe a year or two. Yeah? Now, Yosef was 30 when he became the king.
Okay.
7 years of plenty and 2 years of hunger. That's when the brothers came down. Right? So Yosef was 39 when the brothers came down. So Binyamin was 37, 36. So what, was he a little baby? And there weren't schleppers. These guys were gazettes.
What about his father?
Huh?
Yeah,
but Yaakov was afraid something happened to him on the trip. Mm-hmm. But Yaman was a big guy. They were strong. The brothers were strong people. They weren't weaklings. Yet, Yaakov, so to speak, was overprotected because his mother died in the way and his brother died in the way. So Chana was the only child born very late. So she was very protective. So she said she can't take the kid up. He's not ready for the trip. So therefore, she didn't go and the kid didn't go. Now, the question over here is, the Gemara, there's a different question over here. If Chana couldn't go and Shmuel wasn't weaned yet, if Chana didn't have to go and Shmuel wasn't weaned, then what's the question to begin with? Because the whole question of Gemara before, how did he get to Yerushalayim? So the answer, the mother was there. Right? But over here it could be, they're right, that they lived in Har Ephraim, which was in Ephraim. Shiloh was also in Ephraim. So it could be they didn't live too far from the base, from Mishkan Shiloh. In Shmuel's time, there was no Beis HaMikdash. The Mishkan was in Shiloh. And they lived in Har Ephraim. So it could be that Har Ephraim was not that far from Shiloh, that they could have taken the kid and gone back and forth between meals. Huh? Yeah, it was in Shiloh. Shiloh was in Ephraim's chelik.
He's very right.
Shmuel Hanavi.
Yeah. We're not talking about the same Shmuel?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that doesn't mean he lived there. Shmuel didn't live in Yerushalayim necessarily because the Mishkan, David HaMelech, and Shmuel anointed David HaMelech, right? And David HaMelech's son was Shlomo who built the Beis HaMikdash. So when Shmuel was alive, there was only the Mishkan and Shiloh. So they didn't, he wasn't even Yerushalayim.
Where is Shiloh?
Shiloh is in the Chelek of Ephraim. There's a city Shiloh today, no?
I think so.
It's on the map. I mean, it's on the old maps, you know, the...
Maybe it's in the one of the West Bank towns.
Shiloh? It sounds familiar that there's a city named Shiloh.
I think there's a city called...
You know, where the biblical Shiloh was. And even Bnei Brak isn't exact.
Everything's off, but... no, I think... Some of the Chumashim, I think the Ari Kaplan Chumash has the map of it, the biblical map of Eretz Yisrael with all the cities.
Is Gaza on there? Gaza
is a chilek of Eretz Yisrael.
Is it?
Sure. Sinai wasn't, but.
Wasn't Palestinian lived in Gaza from before?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it's not biblical Israel. I think Gaza.
Even when Israel went to Eretz Yisrael, they were.
They didn't conquer Gaza?
I don't think so. Why did they have all the fighting in Gaza Mela? It talking about the same Palestinian.
Yeah. So not Palestinian. Philistine. Plishtim, yeah.
Right. You still live in Gaza, no? From that time.
So wasn't the part of it? I think Gaza is officially Eretz Yisrael. I think so. No, I know, but I'm saying even the Plishtim, David HaMelech fought with. At Aza. Aza was part of Eretz Yisrael. Pretty sure. Isn't where all the settlers are today in Gaza?
Yeah,
no, that's because it's biblical Eretz Yisrael.
No, because Shlom said there.
Not in Aza, the Gaza Strip.
Gaza Strip, no?
Yeah.
That's not Aza?
She won't send him there. 25 years ago.
Okay. So that's the story so far. Now the Gemara asks a different question. A Shaila. Boy, Reb Shimon, this is a very interesting Shaila, by the way. It's a very practical halach. It's not so practical, but it's a very interesting halachic Shaila. The Gemara says, like, the boy, Reb Shimon asks the Shaila. We know an adult that's crippled or blind does not have to go up to the Beis HaMikdash. What about a kid who's crippled and blind? Is his father obligated to bring him up? What's the question? L'cheirev not. I mean, if the adult's not, the kid isn't. The question is like this. Katan chiga l'divri b'shamei, a crippled kid according to b'shamei. Or summa l'divri shneim, or a blind person according to both opinions. Now, what is the law? Is the father obligated to bring the kid up to the Beis HaMikdash? Okay? Now, what's the question? First of all, a crippled kid could be taken up on his father's shoulders. In other words, you can't take an adult on your shoulders. So a crippled adult doesn't have to go. This is what the Gemara's initial question is. The crippled adult can't walk. But a kid that's crippled can ride on his father's shoulder, so maybe he could, maybe he has to go. Or maybe he's blind. If he's holding his father's hand, who cares if he's blind? He's able to go up to the Beis HaMikdash. So the question is, what's the din? So the Gemara right away clarifies the question. Hey Chidami, what's the case? If it refers to a crippled kid that can never become healed, it seems in the olden times, there were kids that were crippled, that eventually were able to walk, and kids that were blind, that eventually were able to see. It was like some childhood diseases, that when they got older, they were able to see, and to walk. So it says, if it's talking about a crippled kid that will remain crippled, and a blind person that will never be able to see again, he says, why should the kid be obligated to go up? Hash the godl potter, if an adult that's crippled or blind, doesn't have to go up to the Beis HaMikdash. Cotton me boy, is it a question on a kid? Meaning, why do kids have to do mitzvahs? To train them that when they become adults, they should do it. But if this kid as an adult will never have to do the mitzvah, because he's going to stay crippled, he's going to stay blind, so why in the world would you have to bring the kid up? I mean, there's no purpose of educating the kid in a mitzvah he's not going to be able to do. So late tzricha. So we must say, the Gemara says, the question is as follows. Chiga sheyachal is pashit, a crippled kid who will be able to walk. Which means when he becomes an adult, he'll become obligated in the mitzvah. But right now he's crippled. So do you look at the now, or do you look at the later? Or, suma sheyachal is pateach, a kid that's going to be able to see later. My, what's the din? Do we say that right now he's disabled, so he doesn't have to do the mitzvah, or do we have to train him for the future? Okay, that's the Gemara's question. Amar Abaya says as follows. Kol heicha de gadol mechayiv mideraisa. Anytime an adult is obligated biblically to do the mitzvah, kot nami mechanchin alei midrabanin rabbinically, you have to train the kid to do it. But kol heicha de gadol poter mideraisa, in a case when the adult would not be obligated, midrabanu kotter nami poter, you'd also be poter. Okay, meaning what?
Yeah, but today we train kids from all things that are wrong.
No. He's saying that Rabbi answers the halacha is that if the kid is an adult now, would not be obligated in the mitzvah, the kid doesn't have to do it either.
But here we are saying that future is going to, they get healed, no?
Yeah, but right now, this rabbi answers. Bottom line is, the kid now is crippled. If a crippled adult doesn't have to do it, the crippled kid doesn't have to do it.
Doesn't have to, but could?
Yeah, you're right. The Gemara's question is only chayiv. If the women wanted to go up to the Beis HaMikdash, she could also go. Nobody stopped them. The question is only the obligation, which in L'cheira, it's interesting because logically you would think the opposite. Because if you're training him when he becomes, for the time he becomes an adult, so when are you going to train him? And later he's not going to be crippled anymore, he's not going to be blind anymore, so why shouldn't he be mechuyev to go? Why shouldn't you be obligated to train him? But he says there's no rabbinic obligation to train him. Doesn't say a source of it, Abaye, but that's what he holds. Okay. You know, there's a famous story with the Rambam. The Rambam being the doctor, you know, all the physicians, the Goyishev physicians of the Sultan were very jealous of the Rambam because the guy loved the Rambam. The king, the Sultan loved the Rambam. And the Rambam had a theory in medicine that if a person is born blind, he will never be able to see. But if he's born not blind and he became blind, then it's possible for him to see later through surgery. I mentioned the story. So the physicians knew that Rambam was right because they knew he was a better doctor than them, but they wanted to prove him wrong anyway. So he took a guy who was not born blind and they said, we're going to give you money, we're going to give you surgery, we're going to make you see, but you have to tell the king that you were blind from birth. And we're going to prove to the king that even somebody who is blind from birth is able to see. And disprove the Rambam. So they did it. They did surgery on the guy. And the guy's able to see. And they tell the Sultan, you see, this person was born blind. We did surgery on him and he's able to see and the Rambam's wrong. So the Sultan calls in the Rambam and says, what's this? You're wrong. So the Rambam says, 1 minute. First he says, let me see if the guy Taka could see. How do you know he could see? Let me see if he could see. So the Rambam goes in front, they wheel the blind man from surgery into the palace, and the Rambam is there with all the doctors, and the Rambam picks up a card. It says, what color is this? It says, red. Picks up another card. What color is this? Green. So the Rambam turns to the king and says, Your Majesty, if the guy was born blind, how does he know colors? So obviously he couldn't be born blind. So the physicians had to admit their guilt. And again, the Rambam was proven correct. Okay. Now the Gemara continues going back to the Mishnah. Middle of the page. Bishami Emrim. Bishami says, now they had to bring two korbanos when they came. There was a korban eila, what was called eila sri'iya, and there was the shalmis chagiga. Okay, this Gemara is called chagiga. Now, one was a korban eila, one was a korban shlamim. One was completely burnt on the mizbeach, and one, shlamim means peace. Everybody is excited. The kohenim ate, the mizbeach ate, the owners ate, everybody ate. So there's an argument in the Mishnah, Dav Beis, how much does each carbon have to cost? Minimal. So Beishami says, Hare'iyah, the Eila Sri'iyah had to cost $2, two kesef. And the Shami Chagiga was one. Okay? And Beisila held the opposite. The Eila had to be one, and the Chagiga two. Huh? One, yeah, more kesef is one. Bishami says Ariya was shtei kesef. And the first mission, no. Bishami says Ariya shtei kesef. There's not mea.
I know. There's...
Mo is a coin. Beishami says ariya shtei kesef and chagiga ma kesef. One kesef. Beisil says ariya was one and chagiga two. There's mamish argument which one was more expensive. So the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanon, the Rabbanon learned. The Brice explains the Mishnah. What does the Brice say? Beishami, Emin Beishami says, Hara'iya shtei kesef, the korban, the riyad, meaning the oila, was two kesef. The chagiga was more kesef. And the chagiga was one more, one silver. Why? So he said, Beishami explained, the Brice explains, Beishami, why is the korban, the riyad, more expensive than the shlomim? So he says, Hara'iya ku'ela kula lagavaya. By the carbon Eila, it was burnt on the Mizbeach. So it was like God's carbon. If it's God's carbon, it has to be more expensive. And the Shlomim, which was not so holy, that had to be $1. But Mashenkim, a Chagiga, but on the other hand, the Chagiga is not that holy. Okay? Now, but the aid, and the second thing he says, Matzinu Batzeres. We find by the carbon shvuis shariba ben akasav be'ilus yesim be'shlamim that the Torah speaks more about the eila than the shlamim. Okay, like you said, you have to bring 10 eilus and 2 shlamim. So you see, the Torah gives more importance to eila over shlamim. So Beishami says, you know what? If eila is holier than shlamim, then eila should cost more than the shlamim. Like we say in the Ezel Mekayim, Eila is Kedush Kadashim, Shlomim is Kachim Kalim, lesser level of Kedusha. So Beishami is very simple. There's one God carbon and one people carbon. So the God carbon should cost more than the person's carbon. Very simple. Beisilil says just the opposite. What does Beisilil hold? Hara'iya, the carbon Eila, that was Hashem's carbon, the burnt entirely, Ma'akas, $1. Chagiga shtei kesef. The chagiga too. Why? He says, because chagiga is more important than eila. Where do we see chagiga is more important than eila? Shechagiga yashnu lefnei hadibur. Because the karma chagiga existed before matan teira. Masha'enkin beria, the carbon re'iyo is only found after matan teira. Huh? Because by over there it says vayizbuchu zvachim shlamim. Right. Yeah.
In the 50 days from his return to Mount Taylor, they already built his bed.
But they built bummus wherever they wanted. There were no kabbanis in the. First of all, what are you talking about? Why 50 days, he said? Of course they had. They had korbanos. People brought korbanos. So Beisilil holds that if korban shlamim was before matan Torah, so that's more important than korban riyah. Ve'ed, matzino ba'nasiyim, we find when the nasiyim dedicated the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, they brought more shlamim than eilis. Like he says, it was 204 shlamim and 36 eilus altogether. So Beishami and Beisilo basically are arguing in a very simple fact. Beishami holds eilus ri'iyah, God's carbon is more important, so it has to cost more. Beisilo says shlamim are more important, so it costs more. That's what they're arguing. So the Gemara says, Beisilo, my time ali amir ke Beishami. Why doesn't Beisilil hold like Beishami? Why don't they agree with him? So the Gemara says, very simple. To ka'amit riyadifa, the eila kula gavaya, he says, what does Beishami say? The eila has to be more expensive because it's God's carbon. He says, adarab, on the contrary, chagiga adifa, the chagiga should be more expensive. Why? Because the carbon eila only God eats. Here, a bunch of people are eating it. So it has to be more expensive because you have more people eating it. Chagiga is like Why? There is b'shtei achilas. There's consumption by the mizbeach, meaning by Hashem, and there's consumption by people. So Beis Hillel says, logically, here's one eating, here's two eating. Where do you need more? Where do you need more expensive? In the two eatings. I, this is you're going to say, Nelef me'atedis, we should learn it out from Shavuos, that there was more Eila than Shlamim. He said, no. Don in carbon yachin, me carbon yachin. You learn out individual from individual. Meaning, you learn it out from the Nesiim. The Nesiim brought personal carbonis. And over there, they brought more Shlamim. So if you're talking about a person bringing a carbon to the Beis Hamikdash as an individual, you can't learn it out from public carbonis, from the communal carbonis. You have to learn it out from the individual. So you learn it out from the Nesiim. So therefore he holds, Beis Hillel, that if anything, it makes sense that the carbon shlamim should be more expensive than the carbon eilo. Why? Because it's more expensive. Because more people are eating it.
I'm sorry, in what way has it been more expensive? I mean, bigger carbon?
It has to cost more, but Pashas, it was more, if it was more, bigger, it was more expensive. Taisus, by the way, says over here that this whole question is only a rabbinic question. Because the whole question, the amount, is only rabbinic. Minatayra, there's no amount of carbonis. There's no value to a carbon. So rabbinically, they gave an amount. So the question is, what did they? Where do you learn it out from? So Beis Hillel says, why should you learn it out from public carbonis, like Shavuos, where there was more Eila than Shlomim, learn it out from a private carbonis. When the Nesiim brought their carbonis, there was more Shlomim than Eilas. Secondly, he says, rabbis, so to speak, Midrabanu use a logic. The Mizbeach, so to speak, how much did Hashem have to eat already? You know, here, you needed enough carbon to go around for the Mizbeach and for the Kayanim and for the people. So you need more. And like you said, the Mefarshim explained, it's not nobody doubts that Eila is holier than Shlomim. Everybody says Eila is holier than Shlomim. The question is, get practical. Who needs more carbon? That's all.